Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 14, Number 12. This is the last edition for this year for our 14th volume, which is very cool, going into our 15th year next year. And what can I say? We've had some terrific conversations and some wonderful interviews with some top-notch guests, and I will continue to pursue that same course with Tracy. I think that consistency, which I just read, is more important than intensity, and it wins hands down pretty much with everything in life. Those who just keep going on like the ever-ready battery and who don't give up are generally the ones who succeed in the end and leave everyone else in the dust. But for whatever reason, you know, life gets in the way and life throws hard balls at us and curveballs and that we're not prepared for. But somehow, some way, people that want to keep moving on for the right reasons do. And they're the ones that rise just slightly above mediocrity and usually end up running giant corporations or produce something that's astronomically important to people and become very successful or just achieve something of enormous value in their own life. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was about getting back to nature. Nature means essential or innate disposition. In ancient times, it meant birth. So nature and life go hand in hand, and they are both continuously changing and evolving. Nature is often misrepresented. People will try and sell you nature. But on occasion, you will be disappointed, perhaps more often than not. You'll buy something that was anything but natural. So if it isn't natural, what is it? What exactly is nature? Nature is everything and anything that exists. Now, that's all encompassing. So imagine anything in your mind, the universe, planets, stars, molecules, atoms, your house, a mirror, your coat, the gym, weights, everything. That's nature. Otherwise known as reality, otherwise known as existence. So nature is everything and anything. But just because something is natural, which is what people will try and sell you, it doesn't mean it's good or good for you. By good, I mean what we as humans perceive as good, as in culture and religion or our own personal perception of what good and bad means. For example, that was a great movie, one person says. The other person says, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. In fact, I walked out. And the other person says, what is wrong with you, dude? That was just fantastic for whatever reason. And the other person is thinking exactly the same thing. Good and bad are both arbitrary terms conceived by our species. Arbitrary means defining something based on random choice or personal whim. The terms, therefore, are not absolute. There's no such thing as good, and there's no such thing as bad. My point is that if something is good to one person and it's completely bad to another, how can something that's supposed to be good be bad? So the fact is that it's neither good nor bad. It's just a perception. It's in our mind. But the reality of it, the absolute state of something like a dresser or a car or a tree or a boat, it can't be good or bad. It's just the thing that we see with our eyes or use our senses to identify. But there it is. And then our perception, our bias, our prejudice is all brought in. And that's why we call something good or bad. It's all about us or someone we love or care for. You know, an invading army thinks it's good to take over the new country, obviously, or the country that's being taken over obviously thinks it's bad. So who's right? Who's wrong? I always like to use the principle of natural medicine as my own personal determinant of right and wrong. Do no harm. That's the first rule of medicine. That's the ultimate standard and position that I try and take and practice in my own life on every kind of a level. So do no harm principle. Don't harm people. Try not to get in the way of harm is part of that as well. So nature is a non-conscious force The planet is not conscious. The sun is not conscious. Consciousness is very interesting. Phenomenology is the field that studies consciousness. I'm studying that right now and trying to find out what human consciousness is. Do other animals have consciousness? For example, does a bug have consciousness versus a whale or a lion or a dog? Are they conscious? Is an ape conscious? They seem to be. How do we measure it? There's no structure in the brain yet that's been identified as the seat of consciousness. We know that the brain itself, as a collective, gives rise to consciousness. We know that consciousness is not primary. In other words, it doesn't create reality. It's created by reality. So we're conscious of whatever, and with the whatever that we're conscious, like existence and nature, is there independent of our perception of it. It came first. We are evolved beings. We came here by evolution, and we eventually evolved consciousness. And some other species haven't. So you can't say that your consciousness is the creator of everything, because it was a byproduct of evolution. And we don't know all the answers. And the people that are at peace with themselves, usually with a very objective view of life, are the ones that can see that for what it is and just accept that as what it is. And that's probably one of the most important things in life, to be able to accept things as they are in spite of being able to understand them. So if you understand the rules of your own existence and happily obey them, now this is why I like to study physics and biology, because it helps you understand the rules. You know, how does the body work? Anatomy, physiology, biochemistry. Why I don't eat sugar or white flour and these refined foods is because the evidence and the science says they cause damage. And so ultimately, I'm not into damaging myself, and I want to live without damage. So that's the logic of it. But I would never know that. Like my 3-year-old granddaughter, Riley, doesn't know that trans fats or white sugar is harmful to her. And if you give it to her, she'll gobble it up in her ignorance. Well, this is how a lot of adults function. They just gobble it up in their ignorance and or in their denial or in their direct personal evasion of truth. They don't want to know the effects and somehow think they can skirt around nature, which they can't. We're all products of nature. Nature is the dictator. She tells us how to live, and if we don't, we suffer. It's that straightforward. Now, if you live soft, you die hard. But if you live hard, you die soft. It's that simple. And I said this the other day to some friends, and they really like that. Now, she is a caretaker in a old folks' home. She's right in there taking care of people that are unable to manage themselves. And I said, what I mean is that if you live right now in the now with some degree of adversity, like physically, I'm talking about physical here. So you run, you swim, you cycle, you train, you burn. You have that sensation of lactic acid burn. You push, it hurts. You run up a hill, it hurts. Or if you say walk 5 miles, or like Chase and I, we walk to the gym, we walk to do our shopping. We're walkers. We got rid of our car. We love it. We're not turning back. And the blue zones prove that walking is the very best thing that humans can do for a lot of different reasons, which I won't go into now. But the hardship, so-called, I don't see walking as hardship, but a lot of people do. I don't see training in the gym as hardship, but a lot of people do. But I'm just going to relate it to that, okay? So a little bit of hardship, a little bit of adversity is what keeps us hard, is what keeps us lean, strong, functional, and healthy. And so if you live hard with that aspect in mind, you die soft. What I mean by that is at the end, you get like to be 110 and you're functional. That day you rode a horse, you went swimming, you went to the gym. You know, I just heard that Kirk Douglas, the hero of Spartacus, is 99 today. Okay, he's 1 year away from breaking that. So people are breaking that mark all the time. It's getting more common. But he had a stroke, and he's probably suffering in a lot of different ways that are hidden from the public. And I sort of want to see myself as not having to need to do that, like having a functional life and mind and reaping the rewards of the past, so that all of these so-called adversity, the gym workouts, the running, the swimming, the cycling, the walking, the carrying groceries, everything that everyone today is trying not to do, for some reason our society thinks that is deplorable and demeaning and demonstrates that you're not successful. Whereas the opposite is true, because it doesn't matter how much money you have, in the end, nature will get you, she'll take you down. She has no respect for your money, your bank account, your business, nothing. She doesn't care a hoot about any of that. All she cares about is whether or not you understand how to play the game and whether you played it or not. Now compare our current lifestyle to our former existence. Analyze both, find the best of the two, merge the dots, combine the elements and habits that make the most sense, like from the past, the ancient past, the paleo. You know, we start getting into trouble as a species at the beginning or the dawn of agriculture. We start growing grains. Now everyone's got a problem with grains, and we domesticate animals. We've got terrible problems with, you know, climate management. A lot of it has to do with management on a huge scale. And plus, we're feeding our animals crap and garbage, and then that's obviously affecting us and our children. So what you do is you look at the past, you look at the present, like the technology. There's a lot of cool things with technology that you can use to your benefit from a health point of view. So we don't want to throw out the technology, but we do want to keep some of what was going on, the tenets, the principles, the idea. You know, you can go to the gym, for example, and sort of simulate what it would be like living in the bush as a wild person. And that's what we wanted to bring, some of that stuff into our current lifestyle, because if we negate it, we basically turn to mush. Our heads get big, full of knowledge, but our physical body deteriorates, turns to mush, and we get sick and full of disease. That's something that nobody can escape. So we don't want to obviously experience that. And unfortunately, whether you like it or not, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Now, if you do that, paradise is right here on earth. And if you don't, it's a living hell. So I'm not into the hell and heaven thing. You know, I'm just into my life here right now. This is where the action is. And so, you know, living well and wholesome, whatever that means to you, is going to create a future of wellness and wholesomeness. And I'm very attracted to that paradigm. I can really come to terms with reality regarding looking at people who don't. You know, I'm surrounded by them. I'm 58 and Tracy's 57. So we're surrounded by friends, lots of them, that are struggling with health problems, depression, obesity, heart disease, stroke, problems with blood flow. Their arteries are clogged up. And why? Why is that? Is it because they've been doing everything right? No, it's because they have just been ignoring themselves and not looking after themselves. Now, nature is what nature does, and what nature does for me is keep me on track and well. Immersed in nature, I am at one with my being. My chi is aligned, my energy flows smoothly, and me, myself, and I, the three of us who live alone inside of me, we're at peace with each other. One body, one mind, unified, it's the same thing. I don't see it as being a separate issue. My mind isn't separate from my body. I don't have a soul. I don't have a spirit. I just have a body with a mind, and it's all one, and it functions and operates as one single unit of self-expression and individual identity that if everything's coordinated and functioning well, it makes me very happy. So I think a lot of what I see people struggling with is this inner turmoil. They, for whatever reason, just cannot get their act together. And I think a lot of it has to do with not being able to accept what the hell is going on. It's that simple. Like with your family life, or with your parents, or with your finances, or with the culture, or with atom bombs blowing up, whatever. They just can't accept it. So you can choose to live in a bubble, or you can choose to accept what is, and then manage your life in a fantastically unique way that focuses on health. Health first. That's why they say health first. Get healthy, get well, do what it takes to stay well, and then you can manage yourself when the world around you is crumbling. Whether it's a Walking Dead phenomenon expressed in these movies, whether the zombies are everywhere, how do you function in that kind of environment? You know, it seems obvious to me that the people that do the best think logically, rationally, keep control of themselves, and don't flip out and go crazy. So now that I personally am no longer getting in my way, because I really don't. I don't get in my own way. The me, myself and I, we get along. We're friends. I feel I'm unstoppable. I'm not talking about, you know, traveling faster than the speed of light or flying. I'm, you know, trying to be reasonable here within the confines of physics. But I am unstoppable. There's things I can do that in the past I never would have thought or imagined I could do. So I don't see the limitations, which always, now I understand, were me. I was my own limitation. I was getting in my way. I was convincing myself that I couldn't do it. And now that that doesn't exist inside of me, I know what I like, and I know what I want, and I know what I would like to see change. So there's this sense of solace and compassion and understanding that goes on inside of a person that finds that state. So what lies behind me pales in comparison to what lies ahead. I love that. You know, I've had some hard times, bad times, we all have, and they're gone. And it's not that they're not important, they are, but I'm not going to focus on them and end up in the gutter in my own mind and being depressed, because it doesn't exist. It's gone. It's yesterday's newspaper. It's time to burn it. Okay? And what lies ahead is fantastic. It's great. It's wonderful. I can see things in my mind, things I want to accomplish. I shall rise to the nature of my own unique existence. And there's that word nature, right? What is the nature of your being? What are you designed by nature to do? Okay, my topic on this edition of Clinical Review is a good one, indoor stationary rowing. Indoor rowing machines, also known as ergometers, that's a weird name, simulate the rowing action of waterborne rowing for the purpose of exercise or as an adjunctive method of training for rowing on water. So the rowing on water came first. Today, rowing is a popular form of cardio in gyms around the world. Rowing provides a unique form of cross-training alternative that can be mixed with treadmills, elliptical machines, Stairmasters, life cycles, or even skipping. Skipping, by the way, is still one of the best. Ergometer is a technical term meaning an apparatus that measures work or energy expended during a period of physical exercise. In sports nutrition, a popular related term is ergogenic. This term describes any supplement that can enhance physical performance, stamina, or recovery. There are many safe and proven ergogenic supplements available in Canadian health food stores, for that matter, around the world, such as creatine monohydrate, L-carnitine, HMB, D-ribose, carnosine, branched-chain amino acids, L-glutamine, whey protein isolate, electrolytes, beta-alanine, that's another amino acid, cordyceps, which is a mushroom, and various forms of ginseng and rhodiola. Those are plant extracts, herbs, botanical medicine. Indoor rowing goes back as far as the 4th century BCE, before Common Era, when an Athenian admiral ordered his men to build wooden rowing frames onshore to teach his soldiers rowing technique and timing for rowing on board ship. So there you go. That's how it started. Rowing as a means of transport, literally, you know, in rivers and across oceans. And then someone comes up with an idea to train the soldiers on land in their training camps to prepare them for the sea-like rowing. And you can see the connection there. It makes a lot of sense. Soldiers are physically trained for combat and survival, and everywhere today across the planet, in every country with a military presence, big or small, soldiers are conditioned and trained through controlled physical exercise to enhance their capacity to survive and stay alive in tough, stressful conditions that demand a high level of functional performance. Keep this point in mind, because as civilians, the properties and benefits of controlled exercise do exactly the same for us. Think of yourself as a soldier in the sport of life. Exercise is a proven method of elevating human capacity to survive and stay alive in the modern world. That's why the military makes it compulsory. And the mistake that we have in our society is that we don't. Imagine that in order to get a job, like I heard recently that in Australia, in order to get a job to be an employee, you have to be vaccinated. Okay, that's the movement of compulsory vaccination They want to do it for kids in school. In other words, if you want to attend a public school, you have to be vaccinated. So I'm not for that at all. But I would like to see fitness made compulsory, but that it would start in the minds of the children in kindergarten. So they all grew up thinking fitness is compulsory, fitness is necessary, it's absolutely essential. Then there would be no such thing as a non-fit human. And of course, Plato said that life and the capacity to learn starts with the form of discipline gained through the exercise in the dirt. So both Aristotle, who was his student, and Plato and Socrates all agreed that exercise was essential to the conditioning of a human mind to prepare it to receive the academic tougher stuff, you know, the physics, the math, the science. The philosophy of life is learned by athletes when they train. And I can see that in people who never have an athletic background, that they're missing something of great value. And that is the discipline and the hardship that it takes to survive athletic training. I don't mean that literally, it's not that hard, but it should be hard enough to cause strain and pain and suffering, but it's controlled and it forces the body to adapt. It's called remodeling. You get stronger and tougher and better in every way. So the goal with training is to improve strength, power, endurance, stamina, and flexibility, as well as increase tolerance to stress, infection, and disease. And rowing certainly satisfies most or all of those requisites. Now let's talk about the rowing technique. With rowing, the resistance is created by how hard you push with your legs and pull with your arms. You control the intensity of each session. The rowing stroke is divided into four basic phases known as the catch, the drive, the finish, and the recovery. Now let's talk about those individually. The catch. Arms are straight, head is neutral, shoulders are level and not hunched. Upper body is leaning forward from the hips with the shoulders in front of the hips. Shins are vertical or as close to vertical as is comfortable. Shins should not move beyond perpendicular. Heels may lift as needed. The next part of this sequence, the next phase in the rowing stroke, is the drive. Start the drive by pressing with your legs and then swing the back through the vertical position before finally adding the arm pull. Hands move in a straight line to and from the flywheel. Shoulders remain low and relaxed. Next is the finish. Upper body is leaning back slightly, using good support from the core muscles. Legs are extended and the handle is held lightly below your ribs. Shoulders should be low with wrists and grip relaxed. Wrists should be straight and flat, not bent. And finally, the recovery. Extend your arms until they straighten before leaning from the hips towards the flywheel. Once your hands have cleared your knees, allow your knees to bend and gradually slide the seat forward on the monorail. For your next stroke, return to the catch position with shoulders relaxed and shins vertical. Now, I think it's best to have a personal trainer or rowing expert teach you how to row. Have them examine your rowing technique and have them look and watch you row. I was watching someone the other day, same person I've seen, and she's been rowing for months now and she's doing it all wrong. I'm just so tempted to tell her to stop and give her advice, but I won't because it's not my place and she hasn't hired me, and people can really get their noses out of joint if you step in to their space and tell them that they're doing something wrong. From my point of view, all of my life, I've loved it when people have pointed that out, provided they have the right intention. Like some guy that says, Corey, you're benching all wrong, and this guy's like this massively built, beautiful bencher. And he just sees me doing something that's all wrong, and he takes the time, and he's genuinely concerned. He's not trying to prove his superiority or trying to be an authority figure. He's just trying to share something and protect me from harm, which is how I feel about this woman. Now, I've watched many people in the gym row, and most perform the sequence incorrectly. But some row very well, and they're always the ones that have had instruction. So there's definitely a right and wrong way to row from a functional and performance point of view. You don't want to row to cause injury. You want to row to avoid injury. So it's very important to focus on the technique. It's like I'm a hammer thrower. It's all about technique, believe me. I can take my strength into that ring and do squat, literally. And then I remember a guy at the World Championships in Australia, Queensland, Brisbane. That's the name I was thinking of and digging down into my memory banks for. He was from France, came fourth, I came eighth, but he walked onto that circle and he was just like half my size, very slender, an obvious ectomorph. And of course, they're always built out of iron inside. But anyway, he had this great technique. And he was able to, you know, outdistance me by about 10 meters, you know. So that's always been my challenge, is not to take my strength and my bodybuilding mentality into the circle as an athlete throwing the hammer in track and field. And so I start training next year in the spring for the America's Masters in Vancouver. If you don't know about that event, go to americasmasters.com and get involved. There's going to be like 10,000 athletes. It's the Americas. So it's like from Canada right down to the bottom of South America. It's all hosted and organized by BC Sport, by the provincial government of BC. It's going to be done well. There's 40 different events. And get involved. I can't wait. It's going to be fun. It's 10 days. They're going to create this event on an annual, I guess, process of every 4 years. And it's probably going to move around from city to city in different parts of the Americas, you know, Mexico, the States, Canada, Central America, South America. There's lots of places to host this thing. So it's going to be great. I can't wait. Looking forward to it. It'll be super. Now, another great way to learn proper technique is to watch how rowing is performed correctly on the internet. This is something I didn't have growing up. I use it all the time. Today, it's wonderful. Like if I want to change my core routine, for example, and I want to maybe incorporate a new exercise, I'll Google it and I'll watch maybe 10 videos by good trainers doing it right, just to get an idea of what to do and what not to do. And then I'll go to the gym and I'll do it. And I'll think in my mind, you know, of what I've seen and learned, and I'll try and stay true to the form. That's, you know, that's what technique is all about. So concept2.com is a great site. They're the ones that make probably the most popular and one of the best rowing machines in the world. Get to that site and check them out. You know, you can buy one for home. You can use it at the gym. It's just a great tool. But watch the video called The Rowing Stroke. That's the main video I want you to watch at that site, concept2.com. Now let's talk about rowing workouts. The old standby for cardio is just to get on your favorite cardio machine and start using it for 10, 20, 30, or 60 continuous minutes at a low to moderate pace. But this approach is somewhat outdated as a mainstay. Interval training is preferable from an outcome and results perspective. It's more intense but shorter. Plus, it's a different feel altogether. And, you know you've trained when you take in the effects of interval training, because it's intense and it's hard and it challenges you. Interval training is ideal for those with time restraint issues, as 10 minutes of high-intensity interval training is superior in many ways to someone jogging on the treadmill for 1 hour. So let's say 10 minutes, and in that 10-minute period, you've done a little warm-up, and you've done, say, three pieces or three bits of interval training that lasts for 2 minutes. So that's 2, 4, 6 minutes of hard-out rowing with excellent form, you know, sandwiched between an intro warm-up and then a recovery period. Now, that is going to be far more productive than volumes of half-ass training, which is what I see a lot of people doing, thinking they're achieving something. They're not really, comparatively speaking. You know, it's better than nothing, yes, but why use that as a standard? First, you burn more fat because this style, this interval style of training, it's anaerobic. You know, you go hard. You can't keep going. You're going to stop. It's just like sprinting. Nobody can sprint a mile. You have to pace yourself. So we're not trying to pace ourselves here, other than within the confines of, say, it's 2 minutes. So you're going to pace yourself for 2 minutes. It could be 30 seconds. It could be 5 minutes or 1 minute. That's the great thing about interval training. You can change it up. But the fat burning, so-called, the beta oxidation effect is not just the workout itself. It's over the next 24 hours as the body compensates metabolically from the intense exertion. So the intense activity forces a post-metabolic burn that you will not get from walking or casual cardio. You can also elevate your heart rate to a level not possible at a moderate continuous pace. So let's say that your resting pulse rate, I'll use mine as an example, which is 46, and I might get my heart rate up as high as 180. If I go full out doing cardio and I measure it, when I take this data back from the experience, I like my resting pulse rate to be low and my maximum heart rate to be high, and the distance between them to be as great as possible as I age. That's one of the keys to lasting longer with less risk of heart disease. So check your pulse rate, your resting pulse rate when you wake up in the morning, and then see how high you can get it when you sprint all out, let's say on an ergometer machine like a Life Cycle. You know, these things now can measure your pulse rate by holding on to the handles. And just go full out, hard, 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 and see how high you can get it. And see whether or not you can increase your maximum heart rate, which you will. It'll climb higher, and your resting heart rate will also descend and go down. This is the great thing about cardio training. It actually prolongs the quality and duration of life. This intense training, people say, oh my goodness, a lot of risk. No, you're wrong. The actual data, the studies on seniors, average age 75 to 85, in labs where they, you know, do this research, they show that the risks are minimal because the capacity to go hard is relative to the person's existing state. So they can't do what you think they might be able to do. And of course, the whole process is done with direction, guidance, common sense approach. You warm up, you ease into this gradually, and eventually in a month or two, man, you wouldn't believe the results. But really what they've shown is that interval training by far is more reliable and better at building a stronger heart than the slow casual approach. That doesn't mean the slow casual approach has no value. This is why I like to walk. You know, every time I bend my feet, my toes, the bones in my feet are stimulated, the nerve tissue, there's like 200 nerve endings in each sole. And remember, your butt is not a foot. It's not designed for sitting and standing on. The feet are. So get up and move and make walking a default activity, not an exercise, but just a default activity where you walk around as part of your life. But the intensity, the interval component, that's what you got to bring in as exercise. Now, the idea is to warm up for, say, 5 minutes. You're getting on this rowing machine and you're going to have a workout. So warm up. Make sure your technique is great. Warm up for about 5 minutes. Get the chi flowing. Get the energy flowing. Get the blood flowing through the entire vascular tree. And it's a moderate pace. And then it's all timing. And then you've selected a time. You've got a timer. You can use a watch, or there's timers on these machines. And you just go hard at a certain time, say 5 minutes, and then you go hard, say for 2 minutes. And then after that period is over and you're pushing it, you stop and go back to the original pace. And you maintain that in terms of how long you need to for recovery. That usually takes 1 to 2 minutes. And then you can see how out of breath you are. That sort of is a practical way of knowing whether you're in shape or not. And then depending on your fitness level, you crank it up again for 2 more minutes, and then you repeat the process several times. So in rowing, each training interval is called a piece, and an entire workout on average will include 3 to 12 pieces. Individual pieces can vary from short, 2 minutes, to medium, 6 minutes, to long, 15 minutes. Some of these rowers are in fantastic shape. Just, you look at their bodies when they're in top shape, like the Olympic rowers and the college rowers. Great shape. It's just wonderful to see men and women in that shape. And those guys don't just row. They weight train, they run, they swim, they use kettlebells, they use balance boards. They're martial artists, you know, in gyms, working out on bags as athletes with all these different activities. Using a rowing machine can help build and tone your muscular system, strengthen your cardiovascular function, and increase your stamina. Rowing machines are particularly effective for older folks because they place no strain on the back and joints like running can. And that's why swimming is also good, and doing laps or high knee ups and sprint exercises in the pool. Even though you're moving slowly, you're pushing hard and there's just no stress on the joints. A vigorous workout on a rowing machine utilizes plenty of energy, as rowing uses virtually every major muscle group in the body, kind of like wrestling, not the WWE kind, but the actual real kind of wrestling, you know, freestyle, Greco-Roman, Olympic style. Man, that's a tough sport, but great. It uses every single muscle in your body in every way you can imagine. Cross-country skiing is another one that's way up there in terms of overall life benefit and health and muscular use. Every fiber being used, using both sides of the body. Like golfing, you use one side, you golf right-handed, or in hockey, you shoot left-handed. You never shoot the other way, so you become lopsided, essentially. And the other side that's not being used the same way deteriorates or changes in a negative way, and you end up with imbalance and pain. So with each stroke and rowing, you get the legs, hips, butt, back, shoulders, and arms in motion. The trunk and core are also nicely stimulated throughout the entire stroke. So the next time you're in the gym, have a look at the rowing machine. You'll see a lot of concept twos, and have a look at the video and give it a shot and try it as an alternative to the life cycle or the elliptical or the treadmill, whatever it is you're doing for cardio. Try that as an alternative and then master all of them so that you can, at a moment's notice or in that intuitive sense, you come in the gym and say, okay, what do I want to do today? What do I feel like doing today? Because variety really makes training more enjoyable. And so if you have 100 exercises, cables, pulleys, machines, dumbbells, barbells, bars, all of it, if you know how to do it all well, you can just mix and match and have a really good time and get fit as a result. And that's really what it's all about. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from American inspirational speaker and author, Esther Hicks. Most people are rowing against the current of life. Instead of turning the boat around, all they need to do is let go of the oars.